Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Buongiorno, ciao, and benvenuti to Crans-Montana, the host town of Stage 13 of the Giro d'Italia today. The sun could shine in the afternoon, so slip, slap and slop. And do bear in mind that most of the parking in town has been given over to the Giro d'Italia race organisers. Our recommendation is park on the outskirts of town and hop in on foot or avail yourself of the shuttle bus facilities provided by the Giro. In the meantime, as we wait for the race, here's David Bowie and Kooks.
Everything feels like it's changed at the Giro as we spend 24 hours, something approaching 24 hours anyway, in Switzerland, in the canton of Valais. We arrived here pretty late last night, actually, and I awoke fairly early in a room that was, let's say, efficiently insulated, by which I mean efficiently insulated, by which I mean far too hot. And yeah, as a result, it was ding, I was awake at six, and I thought, great, it's not raining, I couldn't hear the rain, it's still quite grey, not quite as cold as it's been, even though we're pretty high, actually. We're in Crans-Montana, which is, for those of you who follow winter sports, extremely well known. It's a bit like saying, I'm at Wembley Stadium, and for those of you who don't know, it's where football is played, because Crans-Montana is, I understand, intimately associated with the world of downhill skiing. Hosted the World Championships or something like that. I don't really know how the structure of the thing works in 1987. Anyway, I pulled on running shoes for the first time in a few days, and I'll just close the window. Hold on, the trucks, Giro trucks are just arriving on the street outside. There we go, but nicely insulated window. What was I saying? So I got out on a run. So it's always quite challenging running in ski resorts because it's uphill or downhill, isn't it? I started heading up the mountain on beautifully tarmacked, immaculate Swiss roads past incredibly wealthy houses. And then pretty soon I found a marked trail, which was simultaneously a mountain bike trail and a pedestrian trail. No mountain bikers were out. It's far too early for the mountain bikers. So at times I found myself actually running on the mountain bike trail on the way down through all those, what do they call them? I did actually commentate on the mountain bike race at the Commonwealth Games, but I've forgotten all the terms already. I want to say berms, but I'm not sure that's the right word. Those kind of like, almost like that banking on a velodrome where you kind of, you know. Anyway, it's very steep downhill and you can actually, it's quite fun running down those. You kind of get catapulted up the banking. Less fun running up them. But anyway, the highlight of my run was I passed the construction site of a big dam that is being built above Crans-Montana that looks like it's nearly finished. I reckon it's finished. I reckon they should just crack on there. You know, so it's a great empty hole with a dam, a big concrete wall on one side. And you can see where the turbine fits in and the kind of bits and pieces. And I looked to my left and I could see how David and Pete, down the years, have tried to patiently explain to me how dams are made. I could see that the river had been diverted because I could see the path of the river and there was no river. I still don't understand where the river went.
Get it pieced together.
On se trouve sur une terrasse, un petit magasin, quasi café-bar, ici à Crans-Montana. En plein montagne ici, dans la Suisse. Et c'est très agréable. Il pleut pas. Le soleil brille à peu près, presque.
Ouais, t'as raison, c'est vraiment joli. La finir, c'est pas loin. On peut rester tranquille avec un cappuccino, un petit biscuit, un hug amande. Ouais, c'est un jour...
Toujours avec toi, c'est toujours une chose des noix.
Tu aimes bien les noix, hein?
Oui, oui. Mon noix favorite, c'est la cacahuète. avec le, pour du salé, ouais. Et les pistaches, ouais. Aussi. Ouais, ouais. Oh, hier, pour manger la pistache glace.
Glacée.
Oh. Vous avez
La glace d'hier.
Oui, la glace d'hier, c'est incroyable.
C'est notre collègue de la radio italienne. Il nous a donné une petite gelato,
ouais.
En français, une glace de pistache, en plein commentaire. Hein. Ouais. On a fait une toute petite pause et on a mangé c'était délicieux.
Une petite tuyère pour manger. Hein.
Ouais.
Ouais, c'est un peu difficile, pendant la commentaire, mais quand même.
Surtout pour moi, parce que j'étais en train de manger mon déjeuner. Qui
dans
était...
en même temps. Ouais, oui. Ça, c'est bizarre. C'est un bizarre goût.
Parce que c'était une salade, fruits de mer.
Ouais, ça c'est pas normal. Ça c'est pas normal. mais c'est bien quand même,
ouais.
Non?
Ouais, comme mélange, intéressant.
Ouais. Ouais. Qu'est-ce que tu penses aujourd'hui, Ned?
Pour la Corse? Non, pour le Giro?
Non, pour nous.
Pour nous. je pense qu'après l'étape, ouais. Après avoir travaillé aujourd'hui, il faut voyager dans la voiture 3 heures. Jusqu'à Milano, 3 ans encore.
Putain la merde.
Pour aller à Milan.
C'est long. Mais
je trouve, après 2 semaines, presque, en Italie, dans un milieu italien,
ouais.
Pour moi et pour toi aussi, c'est très agréable d'être dans un pays francophone, où on peut parler un peu de français.
Ouais, c'est bien, c'est génial. Pour parler avec les gens dans l'hôtel, c'est vraiment... Pour moi, chose importante, et c'est plus facile quand même aussi. Mais, ouais, c'est...
On est assis ici sur la table, à côté de nous, ouais. Se trouvent 4 ouvriers, ouais. Qui s'amusent de nous.
Ouais.
Ils font des blagues.
Ouais.
Ils font des blagues.
Ouais, oui, j'y regarde. Ouais, mais,
on rigole.
Ouais, beaucoup de rigoles. Ouais. Et c'est pointing dans ma petite vélo. Les vélos...
avec les doigts.
Ouais.
Un petit vélo de clown.
De le cercle.
Ouais. Pliable. C'est un pliable en français. Hein.
Un pliable.
Pliable.
Ok. Ouais. Ok, c'est bien. Ouais. Ouais.
Alors, au travail.
Ouais, alors.
I don't know who those guys were.
Yeah, did they? Because you've gone off to get the coffee, and I was just looking at my bike, and there's these two blokes podding with a coffee, and
I don't know how it's made or edit. It must be something to do with, because in each country they operate on different radio frequencies, so their voices must have just cut over ours or something. Yeah. But anyway, I don't know who they were.
Really weird.
I couldn't work out what they were talking about either.
No, I mean, maybe if anybody who's listening to the pod can decipher it, that'd be really helpful, wouldn't it? Yeah, but here we are, yeah. On top of a mountain in Crans-Montana. And, Ned, I feel quite upbeat because of the sunshine.
Milky.
It's lovely, isn't it? Sorry, I'm going to stop chewing because people don't like
milky,
it.
Yeah, milky sunshine. But it is lifting a bit. You can see some very, very tall peaks surrounding us. Thick snow still on them. So, I mean, yeah, it's a chilly start to summer up here. But the weather looks like it's pretty good. And you've been here before, Crans-Montana.
I can't remember when, but I think the Giro has been here before. What I'll have to do is just digitally leaf through the internet to find out when it was. But I passed by a hotel, I think I stayed in, with the Eurosport folks a few years ago. And then the Crans-Montana Lake, which we're slightly below now, actually, I recognise as well. So there's a slight feeling of déjà vu, but that's not uncommon. Quite often I'm correct. Quite often I just make things up because of the amount of places that we've been to that are remarkably similar.
You
as
seem
well.
Very certain that I'm going to go with Crans-Montana.
Sorry, yeah. Crans, fucking awful, sorry.
Explicit episode.
Yep. yeah, Crans, definitely Crans.
But you were very certain it had been on the tour, and I was very certain it hadn't, because I think I would have remembered being coming here. And then the only times I remember going with the tour into Switzerland were in Bern and Fino Emisson, that stage where Zakarin won.
Oh, yes.
And we all got stuck in a massive traffic jam.
Yep.
And Verbier in Bradley Wiggins' year in 2009 when he finished off the podium. Do you remember that?
Yes.
It was the tour of the tax havens. We started in Monaco, went to Andorra, and then went to Verbier. Oh,
blimey. Yeah. That must have been for a specific reason.
17 was on the Isle of Man.
Might have been receipt avoidance as well, mightn't it? avoiding the receipt police, which so we're...
Yeah. What I'm saying is I think you must have been here on the Giro.
Yes, I think it was the Giro. But I will look back. I'm determined to. Maybe it will say in our Garibaldi. And a little Gary, which I'm looking at now. But we can't properly do our prep right now, can we? Because there's been this change where they've basically sliced the top off. Not literally, that would take an immense amount of work, wouldn't it? Yeah. Slice the top off the Grand Bernard. So slightly shorter stage, still lots of conky bits and uphill bits. But yeah, so we can't properly do our prep until we've got the new sheets from our colleague Davide.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I managed to get out for a quick run this morning and I saw them. They were building a dam. It's nearly finished. I was explaining a little bit earlier in a little sequence I did, Matt, that the dam is essentially there. So the big concrete wall, the barrier wall is there, and the big hole that they're going to fill with water is there, and the river that's going to, you know, that they've diverted is there. But I had this running debate with Pete and David that's been going on for years now because I don't understand dams. I don't understand how you can build a dam without...
First making a dam.
Do you get it? Because the river, I could see where the river was.
It's chicken
but
and egg.
It had gone. It had gone, Matt. So somewhere, they dammed the dam.
They've dammed the dam or diverted the river elsewhere.
By damming it.
How
else do you divert a river?
I think a series of small dams. Ask a beaver. I don't know.
You're as confused as me, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a proper... Bonjour? No. Bonjour. Yeah, sorry. I keep flicking between languages. They're Italian. And they looked perplexed.
They
looked a bit perplexed.
Quite funny when
it wasn't being rude though.
I find it quite funny when we're not in France but we're in a French speaking. So the Italians are quite relaxed about that because I think they quite like the luxury of being in Switzerland. They're kind of in awe of it actually, and to some extent everything's
very shiny, isn't it?
Very shiny. But I've been with the Giro when they've gone into France before, and honestly, they're not happy. They're not happy in France, the Italians. I don't think there's a bit of ill will between them. The fact you're having to whisper suggests that might be the case. And although they're about 200 metres away now, just in case they pick up on what we're saying, it's best to play it conservatively.
I've been in Risoul with the Giro d'Italia, and I've had breakfast with the RCS crew, being served a French breakfast. I can imagine their total distaste for a slightly overcooked croissant and a big sloppy bowl of coffee.
Because all they want is just cakes and biscuits, the Italians. They love a cake and biscuit. And very different. But I think... Me saying bonjour to those guys, I think I might need to do some diplomacy, head back, have maybe a meeting to kind of just pull things back a little bit, because they didn't reply in any language. They just looked at me.
Could be quite serious. We'll have to iron that out. We actually haven't got long before the race starts, so we've got plenty to be getting on with. So while we get ready, I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Charlie Quarterman, who's just... The audio diaries are just flying in every night, and this landed last night from Charlie.
Ciao. A little bit of a change of mood this evening. I guess just with the tiredness that keeps on getting accumulated, it's making me have amusing thoughts. Today we got through stage 7, which once again was a wet one, and despite the enjoyment at the end of yesterday, I guess morale was a little bit low, just because I'm starting to get a little bit tired, as if this physical effort is starting to catch up on me a little bit. And a very big regret, is that when Louise came out to visit me over the weekend, last weekend, she did ask me if I wanted some supplies to kind of get me through the rest of the race. At that point, I was feeling very good and didn't expect to need anything. So I just asked for a few Belvita and one kind of piece of chocolate, you know, the normal size thing. And that's kind of how it was going. I was in a one chocolate bar for 2 weeks sort of mood, but it's amazing. It's amazing how quickly that can disappear when you're in need of a bit of a pickup. And I've suddenly gone to zero reserves. I've still got a couple of Belvita hanging around for kind of post-stage top up, but... I think the others are in the same space. We had they actually ordered a pizza to supplement our pasta and rice that we eat approximately 10 times a day. which was nice. But yeah, just getting to that point, especially with the rain. And tomorrow we got more than 5,000 meters of climbing over 200 kilometers, and apparently there's, well, they managed to clear the roads of snow, but there's a lot of snow melt and some pretty heavy rain, and also very cold temperatures on top of the mountains tomorrow. So I mean, it's fine, and I don't mind it. Just I don't know how to put it into words, but my reaction when I think about it is just okay. So yeah, that's it for now. It's ups and downs, so I suppose this is a down. Be bad news is if this is one of the ups anyway. But yeah, just get through tomorrow and we'll see how things are on the other side. And just to finish off, that's bad news and good news. The bad news is I'm so tired that I thought that today was stage 7. In fact, it's not. It's quite a long way off that. It's actually stage 12, which is the good news, because that means that instead of having still 14 days left to go, it's quite a bit less. So let's finish on a positive note. Speak to you soon.
Well, amazing stuff from Charlie, and it really gives you a sense, doesn't it, of just that it is just a bit, every bit as hard for the riders psychologically and physically as you would imagine it would be. And thanks, Charlie, for your continuing impressions from inside the peloton. It's absolutely invaluable for those of us who don't do what you do, because it doesn't really compute. It's hard for us to, well, it's impossible for us to put ourselves in your shoes. So thanks for your contributions. The latest here from Col Montana, with about just over an hour to go before the start, is that the word we're getting from down at the start is that it's all quite mutinous. Strange, because at Col Montana itself, the sun is out now and it's bright and it's pretty warm, bearing in mind the altitude we're at. So it's lovely weather conditions here in Switzerland at the finish. But conversely, apparently down at the start, it's sleeting and it's freezing cold. And from what we gather, meetings are going on right now and they may shorten the stage dramatically today, because I think I'm getting the impression the riders have just had enough now. Just a few days ago, as Charlie told us in his audio diaries, there was a big meeting that involved Mauro Venier, and I suspect Mauro Venier making some very forcible points about get on with it, this is what you're here to do. But I don't think that resentment about the conditions has gone away quite in this very attritional Giro. Look at the number of riders who have already been forced one way and another to abandon. It's a record depletion, really quite significantly different from previous years. And so anyway, it may be that they'll race the whole stage today, but it may be that we'll have some sort of rider protest. Watch this space. Well, yeah, it's as we thought. The stage has been changed, so the RCS have listened to the riders' concerns on this particular occasion. Apparently the CPA group chat had been very active all night, so I think the riders arrived at the start line today, possibly sort of ready to state their case with RCS. And on this occasion, RCS have ceded ground. Charlie Quarterman has just messaged me, actually forwarding the message that he's got. It's about 40 minutes before the race start. The signature podium will be done as usual. Riders will do the start until kilometre zero. So they're going to have to ride through the neutral in the rain. This is because the start today of Borgo Franco di Vrea has paid for the Giro d'Italia, and they want a little bit of a return on their investment. That's just the nature of bike racing. After 200 metres, all the peloton goes to team parking. The riders will change their clothes and hop on their buses. Then there's a transfer by bus with the whole caravan escorted by the police to La Chanelle. Now, I think that's a typo. I think it's La Chable, but I'm waiting for confirmation of that. There's a big parking there and a sports hall where we start the race again at the correct race timing. The exact point will be shared in the sports hall. There's a possibility to install turbo trainers. So I think what they're going to do is take out completely the Saint Bernard pass. And if I'm right about that being La Chable, where they're going to start the race, that's just over halfway through. And it's on the slopes of, well, it's right at the bottom of the Croix de Coeur climb, which is the second climb of the day. So they're going to go up and over that, straight down Valley Road and up Col Montana. And it's going to be roughly 129. It's going to be a 75 kilometre stage, as far as I can make out.
Well, stage 13 was supposed to be originally 199 kilometers in length, as you can see, but the weather is going to play its part in today's proceedings. Terrible weather down at the start once again in Borgo Franca di Vrea has forced a discussion between the race organisation and the riders themselves, who have agreed mutually that today's stage will be lopped by more than half. It was intended to run through the Aosta Valley, passing through Neuss and an intermediate sprint as it headed eventually for the Col du Grand Saint-Bernard, which itself was going to be slightly shortened. And then they were going to drop down. Now, what's going to happen instead is they will roll out of Borgo Franco di Vrea through the neutralized roller. Then they're going to get in buses. And then they're going to be transported to the foot of this climb, starting at the foot of the Croix de Coeur climb, passing through Verbier for an intermediate sprint, over the Croix de Coeur, straight down into the valley road, and then up towards the finish at Grand Montana. That is still two Category 1 climbs, but all packed into around about 75 kilometres of racing instead of 199. So the new start is at the foot of the second climb of the day, and that could provide us with an explosive spectacle indeed. Well, it's 11:45, and actually, staggeringly, we've almost been commentating for an hour.
Was it an hour?
Almost.
On weather, on the intensity of the race that's yet to be raced, our perceived sort of intensity of the race. I had some interviews, and then we've been talking about buses and logistics for the last hour.
Washing machines. Cofidis driving gingerly over a level crossing bump so that the riders, potentially, who might have poured themselves a cappuccino, don't spill it over their freshly laundered clothes.
That was an observation as X-ray vision through the roof of the bus.
A train that was passing where we didn't quite understand the small middle carriage that was... That looked like a little battery pack.
Yeah, you thought first it was a battery pack, and then you thought, well, it's just like maybe first class, like a, and then we thought it simply could be the buffet car, but we just don't know.
Yeah, no bike race. But they asked us. It was quite interesting, actually. It was quite interesting. Genuinely, we watched the neutralised rollout. Thankfully, it was only 2.8 kilometres to go, and it is important for Borgo Franco di Vrea that they got themselves on television, albeit in slightly very disappointing circumstances. And the mayor looked a bit disheartened, didn't he, as he waved them off?
He did. It was a shame. The weather was miserable. But there was quite a few people that had turned out, despite those awful conditions. But yeah, a bit of a shame. But as we said on air, I think we both agree. Interesting chat with Sepp Kuss. I think the right decision has been made. And I do think, well, it'll play out soon, won't it, that we will see some explosive, difficult racing at the end. So, but yeah, I think it's the right decision.
Could be way better, let's be honest.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's a right result for us.
It's absolutely cracking.
Wood. They're clipping in. They're rolling out of town. They are straight uphill. Davide Formolo moving up alongside his team leader now, João Almeida. Geraint Thomas in the pink jersey alongside the other distinctive jersey wearers. And they've been controlled for now by the race director's car as part two of stage 13 is about to get underway in earnest.
Jaime Rubio, the Colombian from Movistar, gets round them in the end and takes a brilliant victory. Does he though? 200 metres to go. Pino back on terms and Rubio is going to hold them off. Rubio from nowhere. Jaime Rubio, the winner. In Switzerland, Pino beaten into second place. Movistar have got their win in the most unexpected fashion. Jaime Rubio, take a bow. That came from nowhere.
We are crossing into Italy in this very moment. Boom, we're in Italy. Made in Italy. We're in Italy. We're back in Italy. We've left Switzerland in some style, going over the Simplon Pass, which...
It's bonkers, isn't it? We've just swapped driving. Ned drove up, I drove down, but not before we nearly went on a car train to get here. So it's been, yeah, a slightly stressful journey, but we're coming down the other side now. And as everybody knows, the weather in the Giro this year has been insane. But today in Switzerland, it was okay. And actually driving up the Simplon Pass was okay, but we literally hit the top. There's a kilometre plateau, and then the heavens have opened, and it's like been... I don't know, it's just a seasonal shift. It's incredible. It's pouring down with rain. We're driving down this beautiful descent, and it feels prehistoric. It's It's terrifying and beguiling at the same time, isn't it?
Oh, it's the most menacing. I mean, particularly in this, we're driving through a cloud. I mean, this has been drenched for days now, and the waterfalls are just cascading down sheer rock face either side of this road. I mean, literally, it's not an exaggeration. It is sheer slate with trees clinging to it and water falling down it that just shoot up hundreds of metres into the air on either side. I've seen some dramatic scenes in the Alps after many years of crisscrossing them on bike race. I've never seen anything like the Simplon Pass. And even at the top, you feel like you're not in the Alps. You feel like you're in the Arctic Circle with like Second World War architecture. And right on the top, I'm sure we'll see this in the coverage if the helicopter gets up, there's this granite, obviously, I would imagine, interwar years, this granite eagle statue that overlooks the Simplon Pass and overlooks the sort of the border between effectively Switzerland and Italy. It's unreal, the road we've just driven on. And this is the race route for tomorrow. And if the weather's like this, we've been descending now for kilometre after kilometre after kilometre. If the weather's anything like this tomorrow, this is going to be brutal.
It's going to be hellish, yeah. It's I haven't actually looked at the weather forecast. I know it's not going to be great, but I just really hope for the rider's sake it dries up. But yeah, beautiful, menacing. I'm a little bit struck. I'm lost for words actually, Ned. And I was, as you were driving over the top, it was almost otherworldly. You say it looked a bit Scandinavian, but it also was a bit Scottish. It was Tolkien-esque. It was incredible. I actually wanted to stop and just walk around. Just the landscape completely and utterly changed, isn't it? And I've never seen anything quite like it. And if any of you are listening, I think you have to see it, because I think we're doing it a disservice. We should. This part of the pod should be visualised, shouldn't it? Really,
try and paint a picture with words. Yeah. And right at the top, there's a Gasthaus. There's a hotel. Called the Simplon Hof or something like that, and it's a kind of quite austere early 20th century building, three stories high with a slate roof and little windows in the Germanic style, and it's all on its own up there, and it looked pretty shut, didn't it? And ambitiously, the Giro d'Italia have placed what they call a fan zone up there, Simplon fan zone, and I don't think there'll be many people there tomorrow unless summer rolls in, but there's no sign that it's going to.
We haven't got very long until tomorrow, have we? We've got 18 hours until they roll through. We're just, again, another old... Yeah, oh, look at this.
Italian customs. We're still going through sort of borderland here. Yeah. So we've just gone through a little arch where Italian customs are...
A few a few Giro balloons. Not exactly festooning, because they're quite spaced out. So no festooning.
Yeah, but we're back in pink balloon land.
Yeah,
that was markedly missing in Switzerland, wasn't it? There were lots of people... But not much pinkness.
No pink balloons. Posters of the Giro being in town. And actually, because it was such a nice day up at Cannes-Montana, it was packed, but no direct... They didn't feel... felt quite touristy, and it's a different kind of feel. I wouldn't say it was sterile. It was just not very Giro, but still good. But yeah, there wasn't that familial element to it, was there?
Very different experience in Switzerland. Very very welcoming, very efficiently run. well, was it? I don't know. Yeah, well, the shortened stage. Oh, we should say it, actually, before we come to talk about the race. You mentioned that the sat-nav took us away from Cannes-Montana, off the mountain, and without you get so used to it, you just put it into your Google Maps and follow the Google Maps, and normally it does you a fairly good service. This time it didn't explain that the route it was taking us to was taking us to a train station and a little kiosk and a booth where you bought a ticket to drive onto a train to go through the range of mountains, I presume in a tunnel, that we've just gone over. Instead, there's two different ways. You either go over the Simplon Pass or you put your car on a train. Ladezug. It reminded me of a time I was doing the host commentary, the World Feed commentary on the Arctic Race of Norway. Huge transfers on that race, and I was driving myself. Actually, one of my kids was with me. They were quite young at the time, and they came along for the ride for the 4 days of the race or whatever. And exactly the same thing. We had a long transfer. We didn't look in detail as to where Google Maps was taking us. And I couldn't figure out why there were only 50 kilometres remaining, but it's a journey time 2 3/4 hours. So I decided to just ignore that because it must be wrong. Turned out the route just kind of dropped us down onto a fjord and we stopped at the waterfront. And it's like waiting for a ferry for an hour and a half that eventually came. We just, you resign yourself to it. But on this occasion, we didn't. The next train was in an hour and a half, an hour's time. And we backed out and went on the motorway instead.
Thanks to your impeccable fluent German, we found our way back. But I think there's going to be a little bit of confusion with a lot of the Giro caravan behind us.
The lady in the booth was really nice. She's lovely. She was putting on a real effort because Schweizerdeutsch is Swiss German is actually incomprehensible unless you can speak it, even if you can speak German. So she made an effort to speak to me in Hochdeutsch so that I could actually understand her. But she's going to be there. She'll be there now. She'll be there for the next couple of hours having that same conversation with car after car after car after car that's coming the wrong way. But you don't want to know about that. You want to know about the bike race, don't you? Never Stress for our listeners. For me, it was all about the race at the front, wasn't it? It was about Derek G being amazing again. And it was about Rubio being amazing in a different way and being super smart. And you can explain why, I hope. It was about Cepeda being strong and tactically clever and doing the only thing he could do to some extent. And it was about Thibaut Pinot looking as good as he's looked in a long time and losing his head.
Thibaut Pinot basically just Thibaut Pinot'd himself, didn't he? That's what he did. I mean, he looked great, he looked brilliant, he looked strong, but I think he underestimated Cepeda and quite clearly Rubio, because you know what the result was. But it was made for a fascinating spectacle. It really, really did. That shortened stage, 76.5 Ks. Thibaut Pinot set up very well by Bruno Amiral, who rode his heart out to get Pinot in the right spot. Drove that move, but there was a bit of friction in the valley road, wasn't there? Thibaut Pinot pushing on the descent, and Rubio and Derek G had struggled to stay with him. And they always had enough of a buffer, I think, to stay away, which they ultimately did. But it was just the interaction, and the more Thibaut Pinot attacked, the more frustrated he became. And I've never seen him so animated, but so angry. He clearly wanted the win, but just could not get rid of either of these two South American riders. And they were just, yeah. But we'd almost forgotten about Rubio, hadn't we? As it headed to the top, he was the man that was just getting back on each time, looking focused, and didn't launch one attack. But I've never seen Thibaut Pinot so angry in all my life, and I think that ultimately lost him the race.
Yeah, wasted energy, wasted emotional energy that translates into physical energy. I mean, he was furious. He properly lost it. There was finger pointing, and then I think the word you used as well, either in the car or you thought it or you dreamt it or you said it out loud in commentary, but we don't know. Is he hissed at Cepeda. He just, it was venomous, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like
it was.
The snake in the Jungle Book.
Yeah, the snake in the Jungle Book. Yeah, that's what it reminded me of, weirdly. I don't know why.
Who's the snake in the Jungle Book? Is he Bagheera? Oh, no, he's the panther.
I don't even know who voiced it. Well, maybe we'll find out. Or maybe any listeners.
I don't know the Jungle Book very well. The snake hypnotises people with a kind of like, his eyes go twirly eyes, don't they?
Yeah, and it's super hissy and super snaky. Although I know the snakes don't speak, but it's like if a snake spoke, that's what it will speak like. And Thibaut Pinot hissed like the snake on Jungle Book, but he also at that point clearly was swearing. We don't know what he was shouting. It was incomprehensible. We couldn't hear anyway. But what it did, he became exhausted. And if you've ever ridden flat out on a bike and laughed or shouted or sworn loudly, it puts you into oxygen debt. And immediately Cepeda just rode up the road and attacked. And then it took Thibaut Pinot about 2K to get him back. I was chatting to our mate Alan, Alan Jett, Alessandro Bataki, we've nicknamed him Alan, who...
I think he really likes us.
I think
I'd hesitate to say really likes us,
no,
but...
I think he really likes us. But the chocolates he got us, didn't need to do that, did he?
No, he didn't need to do that. He dumped about a dozen very high quality pralines on our desk just before we started commentating. I think there was a slight... We were all the commentary teams at the Giro. We were slightly demob happy today, let's be honest, because we got 3 hours off, didn't we?
It was lovely. We went and sat and had probably one of the most expensive takeaway salads on earth.
It's funny you didn't mention how much it cost. How much did it cost, Matt?
It was expensive. 18. Well, I'd say let's round it. Just under 20 quid sterling, which is roughly about the same in euros, isn't it? It was punchy, but it was tasty. And we sat. The only thing that spoiled it was overlooking the mountains, but there was a golf course in between us and the mountains, which particularly for Ned took the edge off. But we sat there in the sunshine,
bad mouthing the golfers,
criticising the people's swing technique. Yeah.
Once referred to a club as a bat
on purpose. Yeah. Well, yeah.
If the ball flew a little bit low, we were quite critical from a distance. We didn't really want to interfere with, but yeah. It was quite golfy up there, wasn't it, like Crans-Montana? In fact, there were two enormous, very modern, very well-appointed chalets right on the finish line. One was called Muirfield and the other one was called Belfry.
Describe my face.
You're doing a... You're quite good. It makes you look quite good-looking, that, actually. You're doing
take a photo.
No, you're doing a kind of slight Roger Moore eyebrows about that.
Yeah. It was just like, it's a bit naff, to be honest with you. I mean, I've got no problem with golf, but calling a chalet after a golf course in Switzerland that isn't in Switzerland, it's in Scotland, a bit weird.
Also, golf courses occupy a lot of the world, don't they? You got Dubai, Florida, Scotland,
Surrey,
lots of golf courses in Surrey. Don't take golf courses into the mountains. You don't need to do that.
No,
there's no need. I think golf, and I'm sure that most golf is played at sea level, because when you start hitting a ball at altitude, it goes further, and you have to. And I think that's why there's no major competitions up mountains, because quite often, if you've got like Tiger Woods that hit it full tilt and didn't realise about the air density, the ball's gone.
We're into Laurence Rex technology, sort of like terrain here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Especially with a dimpled surface, it's gone. And it could hit anybody. It could hit a goat farmer, just minding his own business. Or like that woman we saw with a grey head tealing the land on the descent.
Yeah.
On the way back. Yeah. Yeah, you used the word tealing.
Yeah, I don't think...
Is it actually a word? Is it a word?
Overtaking?
Yeah, they're overtaking. So just to paint a picture, we're in a long Italian tunnel.
Double whites.
Very long tunnel. Double white lines down the middle, and one of the Giro cars, I'm not going to name them, but they are driving, I won't give you their number, but they are driving a Europe car hired vehicle. I don't know what they've got in back, but they've just overtaken, doing it about 130 kilometres an hour, which is dangerous, isn't it, Matt?
What's our mantra?
Our mantra is, well, it was augmented by one of our listeners, so thank you for that, some time ago. This feels like months ago, but... Yeah. Our mantra is very much connive to drive to arrive alive, survive and then thrive.
I think you've got it in one. That's it. That's the finished version. We need to basically.
Well, unless anyone else can add an ive.
Yeah, it has to be. It has to rhyme and it has to kind of make sense. Yeah,
syntactically, it has to slot in.
But yeah, Alan Jett. He based us to bring it back slightly. Yeah. Alan Jett was the
second. So, did you explain who Alan Jett is?
Oh, sorry, it's Alessandro Pataki.
Yeah.
And because Alessandro is shortened to Ale, and we just quite like the name Alan. We've colloquially, we never said it to his face, we call him Alan Jett, and it's, I don't know, we've found it quite funny for the last two or three years.
He's quite a serious figure. He's quite serious.
Yeah, quiet and serious. But
physically quite imposing as well, so yeah, that's another reason to whisper it behind his back and not confront him with it.
But he's quite cool. Like, he give us those chocolates. Quite often, some days, he won't say hello, but he won't go out of his way. But when you catch his eye, he'll always say hello. And I was doing a bit of my social media for some people that I do some stuff for, and I was doing... And then
say you do some stuff for?
Skoda. Skoda Takeover a bit.
So they sponsor podcasts?
I mean, you have a word. I bet they very much into cycling, a Skoda. We Are Cycling is the people that I do a bit of work for. But I was doing my bit to camera, just talking about where I was and what I was doing. And Alessandro Pataki, comes behind me and just waves and sort of photo bombs it and laughs and then scuttles off. So it's
scuttles. I can't imagine Ali Jett scuttling anywhere. No. I think a languid stride at best.
Languidly strided away is what he did. Yeah. He didn't scuttle at all.
Yeah. He's not a scuttler.
No.
Davide Gaburo is a bit of a scuttler.
He would scuttle.
Alessandro Pataki is a languid strider.
No. I was just thinking of the noise that he would have to make to scuttle. It had to be like, you have to wear kind of like clogs or those shoes that those Irish dancers wear, like
flip-flops. You could scuttle in flip-flops, couldn't you?
Yeah, but you'd fall over, wouldn't you? If you're trying to scuttle in flip-flops, they get all folded over and bend, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but scuttling is as close as walking comes to almost falling over, isn't it? Because I think it implies that you're not lifting your foot very high off the ground.
Oh, I thought scuttling was going...
We're in tap shoes.
Yeah. I thought that was a scuttle because it's onomatopoeic. Scuttle.
Alessandro Pataki in tap shoes up a mountain giving us chocolates.
But no, he languidly strode. He definitely did that. utterly soundlessly and coolly with his glasses atop his head. Yeah. You know, only the Italians wear their sunglasses when they're not on their eyes. Everybody else wears them either on their eyes, protects them, or in their hair. Italians wear them balancing on their eyebrows. Why do they do that?
Just like, hang on, what do you mean? Sorry. Right. Balancing on their eyebrows.
So the glasses there.
Matt is now pointing at the area above his eyebrows.
There.
I'm going to have to look out for that. I can't quite visualise that. I'm going to look out for that tomorrow.
I'll show you later. But anyway, I was talking about the race and I said, oh, Thibaut Pinot, you know, what was he doing? And he said, yeah, he said it was too emotional. He said he lost the race. He disagreed with what we're saying. And we had a nice little chat. He actually jumped on my Brompton, gave it a bit of a circle, crossed the finish line, ran back and said, nice bike.
So on this Giro, your Brompton's been ridden by Ivan Basso and Alessandro Pataki.
And on last year's tour, Alberto Contador went for a punter on it as well.
Wow.
They do love a little bit of Chapter 3 Brompton action. Oh, 65Ks, I thought I'd missed the turning.
Don't worry.
But no, just to back up, not back up, I think it was funny because we just got in the car after Ned had done the highlights and we're just heading out of a very busy Col Montana. And who do we see? Thibaut Pinot, lost with a beanie hat on with one of his teammates.
Fabian Lienhardt.
That's it, the only Swiss rider in the race at home. Well, Swiss soil, I mean. But look, again, that was so cycling. He clearly didn't know where his hotel was, but
yes.
Second on the stage. And he's got the mountains jersey, but he cut not a sorry figure on the pony, but he looked angry, didn't he? Didn't raise a smile, did he?
No.
So I think he's only got himself to blame, but it's bike racing, and he's still a rider. My opinion of him hasn't changed. I just think he got it wrong. But Rubio, that lad got it right, didn't he? Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant ride. A calm, composed, measured ride. An understatedly cool ride as well. He clearly had to go deep, but if you looked at his face for the entire time, it was the same expression. Working his way to get back on focus, didn't respond to those stinging accelerations delivered by both Pinot and Jefferson Cepeda. Paced himself back on and then hit him with 300 metres to go. With such explosive power, they had nothing left. It was masterful riding, I think.
A lesson to me in not discounting riders. The thing is, he looked pale with the effort.
Yeah.
The blood had drained from his face. He looked awful. Like, I mean, incredibly strong. He was right up there at the front end of the climb and incredibly resilient. And you're absolutely right, riding his own race. But I think the other two had discounted him at that point as well, because as he got back, and each time it was progressively harder, he got more and more ragged looking. And the notion that he could then have anything left in the locker to deliver that potent acceleration that won in the race was fanciful. So, yeah, it was a great win, and he's a terrific bike rider, isn't he? And it'd be interesting to see how Movistar sort of... Because Enric Mas, after that second place at the Vuelta last year, be interested to see what he does this year. And Rubio is very much the man in ascendancy in that team, I think.
I think it's just whether he can, whether he becomes a stage hunter, picks his stages, gets in these moves, or whether he has the facility to win a week-long stage race or a grand tour. At 25, I think we might have seen that, but I think he's going to become an important rider that just wins bike races.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll be an overall GC contender. You never know, but we shall see. But after that win and the way he rode, there'll certainly be those sorts of conversations about how they can take him to the next level.
So
what about the GC race that never happened?
It's a bit disappointing, really.
It was.
I think Geraint Thomas talked in the interview at the end about the wind. I guess it was a tailwind at the key points of that climb, because it was strong, the wind. They certainly had a tailwind in the valley, didn't they?
Yeah.
Deterring potentially anyone from making a move.
Lawrence de Plus did almost a whole climb on the front, didn't he, after Ben Swift and Pavel Sivakov had taken it a long way up, further than one might have imagined. I thought they'd just take it to the foot of the final climb. But I think both of us were expecting, and you even podded about it yesterday, Jumbo-Visma to sweep to the front and set things up. But clearly, with hindsight, they had no intention of doing that. And there were a couple of telling little bits of video evidence for that. One was halfway up the climb, the moto went along the GC group, and Rowan Dennis and Primoz Roglic were just having a laugh.
Yeah, it was a weird... I don't think it was intentional, but what it... ends up being an unintentional flex where they were having a laugh when Ineos Grenadiers were riding pretty hard on the front, on the flat albeit, so they were in a slipstream.
I think it was on the climb.
Was it on the climb? I can't.
It was on the lower slopes of the climb.
Was it? But they looked very comfortable. But I think Geraint, quite simply, because nothing happened in the GC race, let's be honest, so to put it to bed, Geraint Thomas hit the nail on the head. He said, I think Primoz and Jumbo want me in the jersey for a bit longer. I guess that's... And he said something along the lines, I guess that's the way they're going to ride. And that clearly seems like they've got a point in the race where they will attack, and it wasn't going to be today because the gap is so narrow. Basically, Primoz looks dangerous and he's just playing a waiting game. That must make it quite nervous for Geraint in particular, knowing it's going to come but not knowing when. I think he anticipated it today. It never happened. Tomorrow won't be a GC day, but... who knows? And it's but ultimately, when you step back again, what we want is that we want entertainment, okay? But sometimes, if you really understand racing, it's about winning. If you're capable of winning the bike race, and the GC race is about the Maglia Rosa in Rome, not the Maglia Rosa now, and they're going to play a waiting game and try and take it when they can. And for Geraint, we'll see what he's got.
And the other little bit of evidence was when they crossed the line, one of the slow motion replays, when the GC group crossed the line, you just see at the bottom of the frame, you can see Primoz Roglic reaching out and looking for Sepkus and just bumping fists with him. And if that had been a day of frustration when they'd looked for that moment to attack and hadn't found it, I'm not sure that would have been his instant reaction. That said to me, like, job done, that's all we wanted to get done today. So he's waiting, and it is scary for Ineos Grenadiers, and they did nothing wrong, but then they had ultimately fizzled out, and it was slightly disappointing. It was all about Cepeda and Rubio and Thibaut Pinot today, and I'm quite glad to be back in Italy. I enjoyed our little French sojourn there, although I don't know who those two chaps were who popped up earlier in the pod.
I've still no idea.
Gate crashed that.
I didn't see them after. They just disappeared. It was really... I mean, we've had a few odd experiences on this race so far. But that was strange. Yeah. I mean, I'm just glad we got the pod machine back. But I have to get somebody to translate it. I've got no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah. But firing back those memories that you did of that day into King's Lynn. And it's amazing because we do so many bike races in the year, don't we? How quickly you can forget... Matt, just to, you know, that was at the time, it seemed like the most important win of the world in the world, didn't it? You know, Kevin Herenkot, you know, wow. somehow getting the better, and how they underestimated him and gave him, you know, 3:42. But you know, that group worked so well together. But for him to lose the jersey in those circumstances the next day in Aberdeen, heartbreaking for the young lad. And I don't think, to be honest, it's going back a few years, isn't it? I don't think he's done much else in his career.
No, and the thing is, off the back of that ride, he got a big contract.
He went to Rompot, didn't he?
He went to Rompot on a 2-year deal, and big numbers.
I've got a feeling we saw him. He popped up in the 6-day London, didn't he?
He did.
His partner with Jules Hesters.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
Kevin Herengots.
And I knew I'd recognise the name, so I remember the name,
And he did, because I was presenting with Rebecca, and you were there doing something.
Were you presenting?
I was commentating in the stadium, and I remember Kevin Herengots, and I remember sort of like... Because I remember they took a couple of laps in the final Madison one day, and I thought I've run out of things to say about him, and then I suddenly remembered that day in King's Lynn and sort of like fleshed it out there. But it was pointless because in 6-day London, when you're doing the stadium commentary, no one can hear a single word that you say.
No, because right, okay, you right. They finished that race, and I was doing one of those like Facebook Live tours of the pit area. You know, they've got the little booths. And I had a word with Kevin, and he said, hey, Matt,
It's so nice. The day when I took the jersey in Kings Lane in England, he said, and Ned Bolting, he said, I remembered it. I heard it on the track, and it is a big moment for me.
So he actually heard me mention it. Oh, that's great. What, in the middle of when he was attacking in the Madison?
No.
Despite all the noise on the boards and everything?
So I said to him, how was today? And he said, oh, it went through the whatever. I can't remember what the result of the race, but that was the thing, and it was quite poignant. He looked to me, and I don't know, it was a bit of tear in his eye, because that was at the end. I mean, this was year two, and you know, there was no more contract after that, and he ended up, I know he ended up working in tractor manufacturing.
As they often do.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.